Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this half-hour segment, we're going to continue with a conference call interview recorded on October 13, 1996, between, first of all, Stephen Wirth, the co-author along with Carl Jaspers of Blood Oath, subtitled A Conspiracy to Murder Nicole Brown Simpson, also Stephen Singular, the author of Legacy of Deception, published in softcover by Dove Books, copyright 1995. By the way, Blood Oath was published in softcover by Rainbow Books and copyright 1996. Also, Donald Freed, along with Raymond Briggs, the co-author of Killing Time, published in hardcover by Macmillan, copyright 1996. All three authors have developed very compelling information that O.J. Simpson, in fact, was framed and did not kill the people, did not commit the murders that he is commonly supposed to have committed, despite the fact that the grand jury, the L.A. County grand jury, would not indict O.J. Simpson, and despite the fact that a criminal jury in the criminal case acquitted O.J. Simpson. We're going to pick up the interview where we left off in our previous half-hour segment. So this is the interview with the Stephens Singular and Wirth and Donald Freed. One of the things you point out, Donald Freed, is that some of the blood drops, supposedly from O.J. Simpson, do have EDTA, and some of them do not. Now, Stephen Wirth, in your book, Blood Oath, your anonymous informant, codenamed Skinner, maintains that part of this cause, white supremacist organization and strike team that, according to your informant, performed the crimes, basically had at their disposal a blood and DNA specialist who had obtained a sample of O.J. Simpson's blood from Cedars-Sinai Hospital, where he had gone for surgery, and you theorize about the possibility that that individual may have been Stephen Colburn, an acquaintance of Timothy McVeigh. We should note that Colburn has not been charged with any crime.
No, Colburn went to jail for possession of a gun, was picked up in Timothy McVeigh, Oklahoma bombing investigation. He was a DNA specialist there. You know, coincidental, he happened to be a DNA specialist at the same place that he possibly would have access to the blood. But there's other sources for that type of, for the type of testing they did. There's Arnell, who went to the hospital very frequently, and Jason. They could get any of their blood. See, there's a lot of strange things that occurred. There was a phone call that Donald Freed talked about in his book, that Joe Bosco talked about. The phone call of some woman calling before the murders are discovered.
Yeah, we mentioned that briefly.
Okay, now somebody had to know that there were murders occurring.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. You got a watch stopped at 10:03. For some reason, never used in evidence. Now, you know, barking dogs, squealing dogs, hopping dogs, I don't care what you want to use. I mean, you would sooner rely on a crystal or a watch stopped. Now, Donald Freed talks about it in his book, and it was talked about in some newspaper articles that never used. Now, the only assumption that can be made is somebody purposely stopped the watch at 10:03, not realizing it gives O.J. an alibi because he's making two cell phone calls to Barbieri at 10:01, 10:02, and you can't be killing people and you know at the same time. So, you know, you got that. You've got these thumps on the wall. Nobody has explained the thumps on the wall. Without those thumps, there is no way that Mark Furman ever goes around to the back of the house.
Right.
I mean, they can make any kind of excuse.
That's true.
Now, if people say, well, the thumps didn't occur, he's got... Cato Kalin's got a witness to that. He told his girlfriend on the phone that night about the thumps. So the thumps had to have occurred unless the two of them were in. And then what rational reason would they have to, you know, come up with those thumps?
What?
So you've got somebody pre-planning. It's the only way that makes any sense. Someone pre-planning this. Now, there's also a blue jacket, a denim jacket, that Risky talks about in his testimony that's inside Nicole Brown Simpson's house.
Now, who is Lipsky?
Risky was the first police officer that came to the scene. He was the one, he testified about keeping the same...
Go ahead with this.
Excuse me?
Go ahead, this is interesting.
Yeah, keeping the scene pristine, and... He talks about a blue jacket, and they were wondering, did that belong to Ron Goldman or Nicole? Now, if that belonged to Ron Goldman, the whole case changes. They never talk about it. The defense never brings it up. It kind of just flops right there. Now, you know, what's even stranger, none of the fingerprints that you would have expected, including the fingerprints that Joe Bosco talked about, that Dr. Lee said were on the, he saw on the eyeglasses. And remember, Dr. Lee couldn't do anything. They could only examine. They could not do anything to that envelope case with the eyeglasses. He said he saw a partial fingerprint. That never was one of the 17 fingerprints that Aguilar talked about when he testified. Nor did he testify about the fingerprint found on the back gate that Furman talked about.
What's something I wanted to ask you about, Donald, and I've been an admirer of your work for quite some time, and that's concerns, and this might seem a little weird or sort of a leap in terms of the O.J. Simpson case. In your book, Death in Washington, that you co-authored with Fred Landis, it's a book about the assassination of Orlando Letelier in Washington, D.C. It's also about the destabilization of the Allende regime in Chile by our intelligence system. You specifically discuss Operation Centaur, the destabilization of the Allende regime. And one of the things that you talk about in the book is the psychological warfare and media component to that destabilization. And you and your co-author Fred Landis describe the subjective reaction of someone who had been in Chile during this destabilization as almost producing a sickening kind of feeling. Could you tell us briefly about Operation Centaur, the media and psychological warfare aspects of that, and also something called the Quartered Man, one of the central features in that program, in that destabilization program and psychological warfare program, was something called the Decalcidado, or the Quartered Man.
Yes, you know, that's a shrewd observation. When you talk about psychological warfare as an extension of armed violence of foreign policy, such as in Chile, Indonesia, Guatemala, and elsewhere over the past period, you're talking about manipulation of the media in a certain way that goes beyond propaganda. Propaganda is simply slanting information and planting stories. But when you take the next step, then you are into the realm of the non-rational, and that is the realm of monsters, of El Descuartizado, the Quartered Man, of the various, in Indonesia, it was the alligator, with the open jaws. Communism was equated during the Cold War with a series of nightmarish images which struck at the psychosexual roots of identity. And the aim was not to create anti-communism. Anti-communism was the aim of propaganda. The aim of psychological warfare was to create madness and bloodshed.
And who was what was the Quartered Man?
Well, the Quartered Man was someone was found murdered, but it was then turned into a monster by the press that was seen all over the country like a Frankenstein monster, and so people thought they were buying human flesh at the market and so forth. Little by little, the country was driven into a nervous breakdown. Now, in this case of the Simpson case, what you have are the preconditions. When you have Time magazine demonizing a photograph, when you have the New York Times whitewashing an absolute fascist, such as Mark Furman, when you have ABC, you have the components. I'm not suggesting now that you have the mighty Wurlitzer of the CIA working, coordinating a hydra-headed octopi of psychological warfare.
But by the way, the mighty Wurlitzer is a term applied by former Deputy Director of Central Intelligence Frank Wisner to the CIA's media component. Go ahead.
Yes, you have the frame of reference all right, David. But what you have are the components here, and when the Washington Post puts out a boilerplate story that says, in effect, conspiracy theory of cocaine well, they start out with the story of about the CIA cocaine story of Los Angeles, but then on the jump sheet and from then on, the word conspiracy appears again and again and again. Conspiracy being the C word that communism used to be. You have the precondition here, and you've always had it, for what happens under fascism, where you move from rational propaganda over to the non-rational. That's what's to watch for. That's everything short of that is still propaganda. When it moves beyond that into the non-rational, then you are in a different situation. But I would like to say that to those who follow the content analysis of the media, and certainly those who follow David Emery, who always has this dimension to the stories, because that's the without that dimension, that's the mirror we have to hold up to reality. The Darden book, the Bosco book, both in their way now, from separate sources, confirming the Stephen Singular book, so that you now have a way to deal with the blood evidence. There is a process here we're talking about. And if you put that on one side and the timeline on the other side, you begin to have a dialectic to deal with this, and now you can confront the racism directly. It just takes a lot of courage, a lot of stamina, but luckily, all three of you have it, even though I am leaving.
Donald, one point I wanted to put before you before we bid you a fond farewell here, and that is again, in reading Death in Washington and about the quartered man and about the psychological warfare program in Chile, in which the public was obsessed with these images of mutilation, and this in turn was used to imply that society was unstable. Mm-hmm. They needed a change. They needed a strong man to put a halt to all of this uncontrolled, violent, sickening chaos.
Yes.
And the subjective accounts of people who had experienced this, they said they were almost physically sickened. It reminded me of at least my own reaction to the media blitzkrieg, and I use that term advisedly, vis-a-vis the O.J. Simpson case. I wonder. And again, if you think I'm full of beans, don't hesitate to tell me, but I wonder to the extent to which we might consider the murder of Nicole and consider her perhaps, under the circumstances, the quartered woman, La Decacidada.
Well, you know, after all, in Stephen Worth's book, its great credibility is that Mr. Worth introduces his own critical reasoning into it. He tells the reader how far he can vouch for any given thing. He does his own independent research, which is flawless in terms of the neo-fascist movements in this country and their recent history, which, interestingly enough, hooks up with the now, I think, famous book of Stephen Singular's about the murder of Mr. Berg. So you have that, and you do know that from the ancillary material of the Turner Diaries and others, there is a great appetite and a long-shared kind of underground vision in this country of how apocalyptic events will come about, and whether a given event such as the Simpson case fits primarily or secondarily into that. That's the kind of thing that can only be answered when you've had a full and real investigation into these matters. But all of you will probably be interested to know that as of last week in Los Angeles, the anti-terrorism unit of the LAPD, so long disgraced, the notorious unit, has now been refashioned and re-empowered.
And this is a unit that had been conducting political espionage in the early 1980s on behalf of a right-wing intelligence outfit called Western Goals.
Well, exactly. There you have it. David has done the most extensive documentation of the use of computers to disseminate a list of individuals who were targeted for elimination.
By the way, one of the interesting things about the Western Goals investigation, which, again, members of the LAPD counter-terrorist squad were conducting political espionage on behalf of a right-wing intelligence outfit and then putting it into computers, and some of the information was being put into a matching computer bank in Germany.
Well, that is exactly right, and some of the people involved in the predecessor to this counter-terrorism unit, which was known as the Criminal Conspiracy Section, CCS, and the Public Disorder Intelligence Division, PDID. Some of these officers are now high-ranking in the LAPD, and one of them was in charge of the crime scene at Bundy.
One of the things you mentioned, too, in your book, Death in Washington, in your book, Killing Time, Donald, is that right after the murders of Ron and Nicole, the LAPD engaged in an investigation of possible confederates of O.J. Simpson. Their houses were staked out, bugged, surveilled, etc., and that some of the people involved in this surveillance were people who'd been involved in the COINTELPRO program in the L.A. area against the Black Panthers and others.
Well, that is exactly right, and as Stephen Worth said, and Stephen Singular, this plea bargain was not the tip of the iceberg. It was the tip of the wrong iceberg. And now your discussion flows naturally from Furman back into the situation in Los Angeles and what it is they were turning away from and why it is when they turned away from something, all they could see was the shadow of O.J. Simpson. Had I not made an earlier plan, I would have stayed with you. But you're all in good hands. I'll be talking to you all soon. And I thank you, and I thank the listeners.
All good luck, Donald.
Donald, thanks so much for participating.
That concludes this interview. We have been visiting with Stephen Worth, along with Carl Jaspers, the co-author of Blood Oath, subtitled The Conspiracy to Murder Nicole Brown Simpson. That book was published in softcover by Rainbow Books and copyrighted 1996. We've also been visiting with Stephen Singular, the author of Legacy of Deception, published in softcover by Dove Books and copyrighted 1995, as well as Donald Freed, along with Raymond Briggs, the co-author of Killing Time, that published in hardcover by Macmillan and also copyrighted 1996. All three authors, obviously, have developed information indicating that O.J. Simpson did not commit the crimes that he is popularly supposed to have committed. There are other interviews, not as a sequential series, but rather as separate standalone entities that will, taken together, provide an incremental understanding, or a greater incremental understanding, of the facts concerning the O.J. Simpson case. Those other two interviews were conducted back-to-back on November 24th of 1996. All of the half-hour segments that I've been producing for about the last year and a half or so, since the early summer of 1995, as well as the interviews that I've done and the weekly One Step Beyond shows that I do, are available from a tape duplication service. The name of that tape duplication service is Spitfire. That's S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word. Their mailing address is P.O. Box 1179, P.O. Box 1179. That is in Ben Lomond, California. That's capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D. The zip code is 95005. There's also an email address, A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, that's A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. The address, once again, the mailing address for Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address is A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, one word, that's A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. And again, neither myself nor the station gets money out of this arrangement. I am in the process of setting up a new service to distribute the long archive shows. Those are the long radio documentaries consisting of printed information read at length into the record. Those will be available at some point in the not-too-distant future from a new tape duplication service. In the meantime, people can either write to a publication that I'm in the process of starting. I can't give you any details about it because this is something I'll be getting money out of. The name of that publication is Other Means. The title is taken from the famous quote from Prussian military theoretician Karl von Clausewitz that war is the continuation of politics by other means. You can write to Other Means at P.O. Box 191710. That's Box 191710. That is in San Francisco, California, 94119-1710. You can write to them about information concerning the archive shows or, preferably, about other means. A more direct way of inquiring about the archive shows, which are temporarily available but not on a formal basis from a tape duplication service, is to write to me And you can write to me, care of, by the way, my name is David, E-M-O-R-Y is the last name. You can write to me, care of, KFJCFM, that's Kangaroo Fred John Charles FM. The address is 12345, that's 12345, El Monte Road, capital E-L, capital M-O-N-T-E Road, Los Altos Hills, California, capital L-O-S, capital A-L-T-O-S, Hills, California, 94022. Once again, you can write to me, Dave Emery, care of KFJCFM, 12345, El Monte Road, Los Altos Hills, California, 94022. There's also an email address that you can write to inquire about archive shows or perhaps other means as well. DEMORY, one word, DEMORY at well.com. That email address again, DEMORY at well.com. That concludes this half-hour segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.